Well, I don't know. Everyone has a podcast now.
Well, not really. What is true is that, according to Nielsen statistics, 55% of the U.S. population, that's over 155 million people, have listened to a podcast, and 24% of the population, that's 68 million people, listen to podcasts weekly. And these numbers continue to trend upward.
What's also true is that over 75% of all podcasts fade away after the first few episodes. It could be for a variety of reasons: lack of strong concept, poor production value, people not realizing how much time needs to be dedicated to it, or simply just not knowing how to get the word out about podcasts. That's where WeKnowPodcasting.com comes in.
At WeKnowPodcasting.com, we have a combined 25 years of podcast experience, and we can help you achieve your podcasting goals. Whether you need help starting a new podcast or want to take your currently active podcast to the next level, we got you. From consultations to concept development, from theme music to editing, promotion, animation, graphics, you name it, and we're here to help.
Don't become another failed podcast statistic. Let us guide you and help your show become a success. Check out the website at WeKnowPodcasting.com, and even if you're on the fence, don't hesitate to reach out. We're friendly guys, we're passionate about pods, and we're here to help.
Following his dismissal from Kajagoogoo, lead vocalist Lamal was gifted a song by the father of disco to be the theme of an iconic kids' fantasy film. Chasing Fletcher Allen co-writer and star Heidi Cox joins us this week to discuss The Swamps of Sadness, Rock Biters, and Lamal's catchy theme, The Neverending Story. Ah, 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 ah.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, Heidi, as we were discussing off mic, this is the sweatiest I've ever been for an episode of One Hit Thunder because I lost track of the time, got directly off the treadmill, and started recording this podcast with you. But it makes sense because much like the three bullies that are running away from Falcor, we are talking about the song Neverending Story today. And I can't believe it's taken this long to talk about this song. Amazing song.
It is such a great song, and that's such a good, I don't want to say comparison, but like it's a deep cut. Good call. I mean, it could also be reminiscent of a Atreyu's journey. He got very dirty and sweaty before he met Falcor, going through the swamps of sadness with Artex, one of the worst parts of the movie, but also the most moving.
We got to talk about that scene. I see that referenced as the most traumatic point of so many people's childhood, and we might as well just talk about it right off the bat.
Get it out of the way.
Atreyu watching, what was his horse's name?
Artex.
Artex, watching Artex sink in the Swamp of Sadness.
The
was that what it was called?
Swamps of Sadness, yes. Yeah. On their way to see the Ancient One.
What a weird movie, first of all.
It's the best, though.
It is good. It is really good, but so strange that it was so normal. as a kid, I didn't realize what a crazy movie that was. One of the, and I have to say this right off the start here, one of the worst sequels I've ever seen to a movie, too.
Oh, yes.
R.I.P. Jonathan Brandis and everything, but what a terrible sequel to the movie, but amazing original movie. And it had an amazing soundtrack, obviously. And once again, that's a song we're talking about today, sung by Lamal, who was a one-hit wonder, kind of a one-hit wonder.
Well, I mean, he was solo, right? Like, because he went, did he get kicked out of his band or something? They were like, get out.
He got kicked out. So I didn't realize how short the time frame was until I did research. But he joined the band. So this is the time frame I found. He joined, was it Kaja Gugu, I think is how it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. He joined that band, had a chance encounter with Nick Rhodes of Duran Duran, and convinced him to produce their first single, Too Shy. That was released in January of 1983, and he was kicked out of the band by the middle of 1983.
Wow.
And already starting his solo career by 1984.
What happened? I guess it's probably none of our business. But
well, so I did a little bit of research on that too, because I was like, that is a really short time frame. His press release was, I've been betrayed by my family. Like, that's how he felt about everything. He said they were upset that I made them successful. But the band said that the musical direction was just, he wanted to do, the way they said it was, we just wanted to play tunes and he wanted to be in the bright lights of celebritydom. So I don't know if that necessarily means like he was a diva, or if that literally means like, hey, like we formed this band and we were content just playing tunes and he wanted to be way more bigger than we were.
You know what I think it was, Matt?
What?
I think the rest of the band was too shy.
I mean, he really had a drive for performing under names that are really hard to pronounce.
Yeah, Kaja Gugu.
Right?
I mean, it sounds like he had a real whirlwind. He had the hit with Too Shy by Kaja Gugu. Within 2 years, he wrote the theme song to, I mean, Matt, you might know. Heidi, maybe you know too. I actually don't know. So I was a kid. I love Neverending Story, but I don't remember it being in theaters and stuff. I just remember it always being on TV. Was this a movie that became popular after the fact, or was it popular upon release? Because I don't know.
All of the above, I think. I mean, I didn't see it in the theater either. I don't think I even saw it on a big screen until 3 or 4 years ago when Jonathan and I went to Cinespia, which is a thing here in LA where they project, you know, classic movies on the mausoleum at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. That was the first time I'd seen it on a big screen, but I think it was pretty popular.
It was definitely during a time where something as weird as this was making money, because you have to remember that this was like, the year before this was Kroll, the year after this was Labyrinth, Dark Crystal was somewhere, like early 80s to like 86 was prime time for like fantasy film for kids.
This is much better than Labyrinth.
Oh wow.
I don't know. Look, that's a hot take.
I like both. I like both so much in different ways for different reasons. But I just remember being a little girl and wanting to like pull my hair back so tight as I possibly could, so I could look like the childlike empress. And I can't remember her name, but I follow her on Twitter and I think she follows me back now. Tammy something.
What is her name? What is the name?
Right now. She's very sweet.
I'm talking about in the movie. In the movie. Oh, what's the name?
Well, he has to give her a new name. We don't know her old name.
Is it like Star Child or something like that?
Moon
Child.
Something. Yeah, something like that. Very hippie.
Moon Child.
His mother who passed away, who he lost, and he's grieving. So he locks himself in the attic and of the school and reads the book.
His mother's name is Moonchild?
I think it was something like that. I'm gonna actually, if y'all
His dad, aka Gerald McRaney, was named was married to a woman named Moonchild. Is that what we're supposed to believe in this movie?
He seems too like stuffy for that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Tammy Stronach. Oh gosh. So I'll probably tweet about this podcast when it's released. So Tammy, I'm sorry, I got your name wrong when I first
We also got to get a Labyrinth versus Neverending Story poll
she's
going here.
So sweet, though. I love her.
So don't get me wrong. I think that Neverending Story is probably a better made movie all around. But man, the songs in Labyrinth are really good. The puppeteer, like that has some of the strangest puppeteering. There's that scene where she falls down the door and it's just all hands forming faces with their hands and
the
talking to it.
Like, amazing.
There's some trippy shit in Labyrinth.
David Bowie's crotch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most impressive puppet Jim Henson's ever put together, to be fair. But I adore Labyrinth.
Labyrinth is great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think they're equally good. Like I said, for different reasons. I mean, the soundtrack to Neverending Story is really good too. It was funny. I was my friend Stephanie Prisman, when she got married, she had this really cool like DJing the whole reception, including when we were just having dinner. And he like threw in some of the, you know, like the score from the movie, and you're like, oh my God, you're going na, da, 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 while you're eating. Like, and I'm like, oh my God, that's right. The score is really good too. It's very whimsical.
I just, the day before, or 2 days before we're recording this, I DJed my best friend's wedding for him. And on the playlist was the Newfound Glory version of the Neverending Story theme for during dinner. So I played all 2 minutes and 17 seconds of that at some point during the wedding.
Why would you play the Newfound Glory version?
That was his request.
Just a question. Why would you play the actual version?
I queued up the actual one in case he made a typo, and I checked. He's like, no, we just really like the Newfound Glory cover.
Wow.
It's like, all right.
This guy that was DJing Stephanie's wedding, he was like mixing everything all together. It was very fancy what he was doing, but it was cool. It was really cool. So I love Labyrinth too for different reasons. I think there's like Frank Oz or some sort of puppeteering going on in Neverending Story as well. And it had to have been, I don't know, maybe not ILM.
I feel like,
but
anything with puppets, they had to pull from some of the Henson company.
Yeah, because you've got Falcor and you've got the ancient one that looks like a giant turtle.
The Rock Eater.
The Rock Biter. He's amazing. Yeah. I love that Rock Biter. He's so sweet.
Did you ever see the really bad third Neverending Story movie with Jack Black?
Third one?
No. There's a third one where Jack Black is the bully.
No.
And Rock Biter has a son, and they have a whole sequence where they sing Born to be Wild.
That's a hard pass for me.
It's awful.
I'm ready to start on my Neverending Story 4 script. You've convinced me. I'm ready. Two was the worst thing I've ever seen. I have it. I'm looking
at. Two was awful.
Yeah. And I have a two pack that I bought at like Walmart in a $5 bin like 15 years ago that has one and two. Why would you put two in a package with one is the question.
Yeah. I don't remember a ton from the Neverending Story 2, but like I remember how disappointed I was when I watched it. And, you know, you can bring me in with Jonathan Brandis. I like him. I'll go in there and check that out. But it was such a bummer.
That kid from Neverending Story, did he ever make another movie?
I mean, look, I have the IMDb up right
now. I wonder if he did.
Bastion,
yeah.
Barrett Oliver. He looks like he has done some like production work. And he was in Cocoon in 88. Cocoon, The Return and Cocoon in 85. I don't see a whole lot after that. So maybe not. Not even
after that emotional performance?
I mean, he did like some location managing in 2001.
Maybe acting just wasn't for him. Like, he's a good actor for sure, but maybe he was just like, nah, I like the behind the scenes stuff more.
Or maybe he just knew he couldn't top that performance. Maybe he was one and done. Peace, I'm out. I made the Neverending Story. People are going to watch this movie forever and talk about it forever and make references to it forever. So, look, bringing it back around to this song, we're getting out in the woods a little bit here. This song is one of those songs, which I talked to you guys about this before, but along the lines of the DuckTales theme song or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme song, or maybe even Inspector Gadget, where I like to pretend that it's just a song and there's no show or movie that has anything to do with it. Could you imagine if DuckTales was just a song that I wrote and I showed to you guys and you're like, wait a minute, what? What are you saying DuckTales? And that, yeah, DuckTales, of course. This song, whereas those songs are very specific, this song actually kind of, you know, if there wasn't a movie called Neverending Story, it still could kind of work. When I'm looking at the lyrics, you know, I mean, a Neverending Story, that could just be the referencing, I don't know, the history of humankind or something, or the history of imagination or something. Mm-hmm. Because you look at the lyrics, it's turn around, look at what you see in her face, the mirror of your dreams. Make believe I'm everywhere, given in the light, written on the pages is the answer to a never-ending story. The never-ending story.
I think it's
Is it?
actually.
Okay. Yeah. It does say ah. I remembered it as oh.
But it was written for the movie. It was not written by Lamal, though, who is a.k.a. Chris Hamill. It was written by Keith Forsey and Giorgio Moroder. Sorry, Giorgio. Apparently, Giorgio was one that wrote, like, some stuff for Donna Summer. And I think he wrote the Flashdance theme song. And Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds.
No.
Yes.
Are you serious?
That's what it says. I mean.
Whoa. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah. So he just performed it. But he did a great job. And I think actually one of the other cool things that I read was that the woman who sang backup with him, Beth Anderson.
I was about to say, we need to give her a shout out because for the longest time, I just thought this was a female singer because I felt like her vocals are so much more prominent in my head throughout most of the song. And she didn't even get a credit.
And she wasn't in the music video.
No.
There was another woman that lip synced to her part.
They grabbed a random backup dancer from his touring band and made her the female vocalist in the music video.
I mean, you know what? I get it. As an indie filmmaker, when you got to get something shot, you got to get it shot. If Beth wasn't there, you know what I mean? You just kind of got to work with what you have. But yeah, so I thought that was really interesting. Oh, and the other thing that I learned, the way that the song fades in and fades out is also supposed to represent that it's never ending because it just keeps going.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Love it. That song, that's some good songwriting right there. I love it. Hey, this song peaked at number 17 on June 15th of 1985. And man, oh man, the charts were packed full of songs from movies at that time, because at that time the number three song, which I can't believe this song was number three, was Axel F from Beverly Hills Cop, which was an instrumental.
Chris, I think that song made it to number one.
Wow.
I think the Beverly Hills Cop popularity pushed that song all the way to the top spot at one point.
That's interesting. I wonder how many instrumental soundtrack score songs made it to number one, because I don't know how many. It's definitely Harold Faltermeyer's only hit single. Yeah. And also there's that. And also Don't You Forget About Me. Simple Minds was number 18, was one spot below that at the time, which I'm sure that song went higher too.
It was on its way down. It peaked at number one as well, and this was on its like farewell tour.
But written by the same guy.
And he just had two songs passing in the night on the Billboard charts.
Good for him.
That's crazy. We don't know this guy's name until now. This guy had such an impact on the charts in the 80s, yet we're just learning his name right now. We can't even pronounce it.
Oh, I know. Well, I keep getting messed up by the last name because that makes me think of Mordor's map from like Harry Potter or Mount Doom and Mordor from, you know, I got fantasy on the brain.
This was also the year of Tears for Fears, because at the time that this peaked at 17, the number one song in America was Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. But for the entire year of 1985, the number one song of the year was Shout by Tears for Fears. So this was definitely Tears for Fears' big year as well.
I love them. That's wonderful.
Wow. 1985 was pretty awesome. You had all these like puppet fantasy movies. So Matt would have been in his glory. Absolute glory. Don't even talk about puppets or Muppets around Matt. Gets a little excited.
I love Muppets too. I get it, Matt.
On top of that, Tears for Fears are dominating the charts. That's awesome. This is Back to the Future. This is Back to the Future.
I was actually thinking the same thing. Yeah. So there probably was some Huey Lewis on the chart somewhere too then, right?
Yeah. Don't You Forget About Me's on the charts. So that must mean that Breakfast Club is 1985, right?
Yeah.
Man, good times in the 80s. I don't know. I think of this time a lot. I think of like hair metal and stuff, but I guess that was a few years later before things got ruined by that. You know, because at this time the music seems cool, the movies seem weird and cool, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a decent time to me.
I don't know if the hair metal was infiltrated. I feel like it was around, but yeah, like I would say by the time we get to 87, that's when it was like Poison and White Lion and, you know, what is it, Warrant, yeah. and got pretty.
I'd say right now in 1985, probably like Bret Michaels is stumbling out of the theater after seeing Neverending Story or Back to the Future and is like, I got an idea for a song. And he like sits down and starts writing like Talk Dirty to Me or something. like it's just about to happen, but it hasn't quite happened.
Or maybe a monster ballad or something, you know. I got to say I'm not gonna hate on a little GNR though. I do enjoy Guns N' Roses every now and then.
I feel like they barely count.
They barely count as hair metal.
Oh, I get you.
Because they weren't doing like the full blown spandex makeup, like New York Dolls inspired vibe. They were just kind of plugging in, chugging a bottle of whiskey on stage and just ripping through tunes. But man, their new song sucks. I'm not sure if you heard that.
Yeah, it's bad.
I haven't, but now I will go and listen.
If you thought Chinese Democracy was the worst that you were going to get out of Guns N' Roses, they got a surprise for you with their new song.
What a bummer. I hate that.
Yeah. Matt, I got to admit something to both of you. I did not dig further into Lamal's solo material before this episode. I should have put it on while I was getting sweaty on the treadmill, but I didn't. Did either of you listen to any of his other songs?
I am embarrassed to say that I didn't.
We're relying on Matt.
I've just been busy.
The answer's no, but also the flip side of that is based on his chart sales, no one listened to the other songs that he had to offer. His top five Spotify plays are four versions of Neverending Story. A song that peaked at 52 on the Billboard charts when it was released, called Only the Love, or Only for Love.
I think he did well in the UK, if I read correctly. I think even Neverending Story was a number one in the UK and in other parts of Europe.
Actually, it charted its lowest in the States, which is weird because it was, an American movie.
Yeah, it's really strange.
But his sales were never anything incredible. It's honestly, he seems like he's a happy guy, but, there wasn't a whole lot. It was like he put out this song, and it was really big, so he finally put out his solo album, and no one bought it. And then he put out two more albums, and no one bought it. And pretty much since 1990, his entire career has been appearing on, retro shows, performing this or Too Shy.
And I think he actually tours sometimes with 80s nostalgia type band. I saw that somewhere. I read, I can't remember who he had toured with.
You touched on something important. Lamal's happiness is very important to me.
Yeah.
And as long as he's happy, or at least seems happy, then I'm happy. His hit does live on. Lamal's legacy lives on thanks to a little show called Stranger Things. It got a revitalization in the past few years. Young kids now listen to this song, like this song. I've seen little kids listening to this and liking it and actually listening to Gaten Matarazzo's version of this song. I've talked to you guys about this off mic, but my bandmate in Punchline, Steve, at some point has played a show with that kid's band. I would say Lamal owes a great deal to Gaten Matarazzo for bringing new life to this song and maybe putting a few bucks in Lamal's pocket.
So
sure.
I actually have some fun information about that very topic. Lamal has given a huge shout out to Netflix. He said that Netflix has single-handedly revived his career because the inclusion of this song in Stranger Things saw on Spotify 825% increase on the streams. YouTube reported an 800% increase on the views of the original music video. Almost the exact same thing happened to him a year prior when they included the song Too Shy on Black Mirror episode that they had produced. So he said, Netflix is keeping my career alive, but he didn't even know that the song was going to be in Stranger Things until his nephews showed him a clip of it happening.
That's not what I read. I read that he told his nephew while he was driving down the road that, I think my song's going to be in something called Stranger Things. And his nephew freaked out and said, That's amazing. That's huge.
The wiki page, yours is probably a better source because the wiki page is never a good source. The wiki page said he wasn't even aware of it until his nephew showed him the clip on YouTube.
I feel like, I mean, maybe if he had a lot of songs that he wouldn't know because of like his publisher would be so busy, but he only has really a couple of them. So I don't know.
Well, I was wondering because you said he didn't write it. So would they even really need to go through him at all for anything? Or would it just be through the songwriters and the guys who did all the music? It seems like he was a hired gun to sing. You know what I mean?
But
like,
I'm trying to remember, did they actually play the actual track too after Gayton sang it? If they played the actual track, then yes.
I think as he started to sing it, the music started to swell underneath him, and then it was like a sing along.
Yeah, so who knows? I mean, I know I haven't
classic scene in... regardless.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and you probably know better than any of us, Chris. But like, I know this one guy who co-wrote "I Will Survive" and a few other like really huge Motown things. Like when he was part of like some like songwriting machine back in the day, and he will every now and then he'll just get like these giant checks and he doesn't even know where they're coming from until he reads what it's for. So, and sometimes it's like sampling from like rappers and things like that. And
right.
That's
where the money is. That's where the money is for sure.
I think Chris and I talked about this last time I was in Pittsburgh, but I always remember I'm friends with the guitarist of this band, Goaty Hook. Every once in a while, he'll post a picture that'll just be a check from MTV for about $1.50. And he always just says, looks like they replayed the episode of Road Rules that features one of my songs. And I think there was something similar that you had, Chris, with in Van Wilder 2.
Oh, yeah. Those Van Wilder 2 checks,
they're like, what, 75 cents every time it's on Comedy Central or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I got really excited a few weeks back because I got an envelope from SAG-AFTRA and I was like, what is this? I opened it up and it was like a European royalty check for a Lifetime movie I did like 10 years ago. And it was like $40, but I was like, ah, cool. I put gas in my car. You know, it wasn't like the 5 cent ones that some, you know, some people, cause actors, the same thing happens with actors too. You get like checks for 5 cents and what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten the checks for 8 cents before, but also to Heidi's point, I have gotten the ASCAP checks that were like $120. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, nice.
Yeah. You know, it's just like a nice surprise.
It's like a magic little envelope of money that I get every once in a while. And you get groceries one time or something.
Yeah,
it's kind of nice. And I know you could people could complain about it only being that much, but hey, I'll never complain about free money.
No.
When we're talking about the never ending story, I want to bring it back to the movie for a second because I feel like this gives us a chance to talk about the movie. We all are in agreement that we love this movie, right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay. If this movie came out right now or we saw it for the first time right now, would we love it?
I think I would.
The 80s were probably the top point in doing like kids movies that really didn't even remotely talk down to kids. So I think that if it was exactly how it was now, you'd look at it through the same lens that you'd look at like a Pixar movie where you're like, man, this movie's not shying away from like what it's saying in a deeper way. I think the 90s were really bad with kids movies being watered down for kids.
Give me an example.
I just think that like the 90s, the late 80s and the 90s, you're starting to get like the Care Bears movie, like Fern Gully, like you're getting these movies where I like them, but they're not really designed with the mindset of like anyone of any age is going to be able to enjoy this and pull like a message out of it. Like, it's like, no, this is definitely, we're talking down to the kids about what we're trying to, Fern Gully's not even the best example because it's like actually talking about like environmentalism. But there was like a period, even like Disney got real bad towards like the late 90s after like they had that second renaissance peak where they just started to like phone it in again. Like Home on the Range comes to mind as like a really bad one.
I think I would like it. The only thing I would be in my mind, I wonder if they made Neverending Story now, would they have used as many practical effects? Because I think the practical effects are actually the best part. All the puppeteering and stuff. Would Falcor have been CG?
I'm assuming Chris is saying that we get the movie exactly as it is.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay. We get it exactly as it is. But yeah, I'm surprised they haven't tried to do that yet. They haven't tried to remake this movie yet. I think Stranger Things is good.
It is.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, sometimes I'm like, eh, the story's not the best, but I'm entertained the whole time. I think it's good. And people will argue. Then I watch other things that come out. I'll give you a perfect example. And I saw a bunch of people saying like, oh, this was so good. And I put on this, Fear Street.
Oh, it was kind of dumb.
That was trash. Yeah. That was pure trash. That was so poorly made and poorly written. And like, why did people like that and say it was good? Because I was ready to be like, oh, this is going to be like a whatever, campy, but still good.
It was
thing.
Riverdale.
But no, it was just bad.
It was just, I didn't watch
it. Was
it.
Just Riverdale as a horror series.
Yeah, you don't need to. I even thought Riverdale was okay.
I'm kind of on the same page as you, Chris, though, as Stranger Things, because people were just like, this is so good. And I was like, it's really, yeah, it's good. You know, like I was never
yeah, it's good.
Completely blown away by it, but I was like, yeah, it's compelling. I definitely want to see what happens.
I don't get all excited, but I think it's good, though. You know, I see the merit in it being a thing that, you know, for kids, but also adults can appreciate or whatever. But yeah, some things I can't get past the stupidness of it. That Fear Street being one of those things. Anyway, back to this song. I don't know what to think about Lamal. It seems like he was two for two as far as the songs that I know, you know, he had his moment for sure.
Yeah. That I still kind of go back to wondering about that press release that he put out after he got kicked out of the band, though. And like, it makes me go, oh, you know, in the entertainment industry, there are a lot of narcissistic personality disorder. Well, there are a lot of people with narcissistic personality disorder. I'm like, is he one who has that? I don't know. Like, it could, you know, anyone in the band could have something like that. But
I would say, especially in 1983, when we weren't acknowledging that that was a thing, he almost definitely had one.
Lead like, singers, man. No, but not all of them. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it's hit or miss. The same thing with actors and actresses. And
he actually got his start as an actor.
Before
he started doing music, he did a tour. Was it Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat?
Is Joseph the and show? The Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat by
so
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
He did a tour of England with that and appeared in a few TV shows and was even an extra in the music video for Stand and Deliver by Adam and the Ants before
Look
he got
you.
His start in music.
Look at you with all your trivia. My goodness, I didn't know that. I didn't think that it was one guy at first. I thought it was like, at least I thought it was kind of like Roxette or something. Yeah. It was like two people.
Until I did the research, it didn't even click in my head that his stage name is literally just an anagram of his last name, Hamill.
I'm just catching up with you now that you say that.
Yeah, his real name is Christopher Hamill, and he just took his last name and rearranged the letters and said, Lamal, that's more marketable than Hamill.
No offense, Mark.
Yeah, he don't want to compete with Mark. Yeah, this was not a time in history where you wanted to be competing with that guy.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
I don't know. What do you guys think? Are we giving Lamal a thunder pass here, or is this a blunder? I don't know.
For the song.
We didn't dig, none of us dug into the rest
none
of his song. That's
into
the problem.
His back catalog, but you know what, even ignoring the back catalog, there's been a handful of songs, Chris, where you and I have just been like, just the fact that he got this one out there, but oh man, no, because then the flip side is he had nothing to do with it beyond, you know what? I'm actually, so the song Neverending Story, I'm saying thunder all the way. Lamal, though, I'm going blunder here. He didn't write the song. I still think that the female vocals by Beth Anderson are more predominant in the actual mix than his actual vocals. And he really didn't do much with his career after this. I mean, I haven't listened to his other songs, but like even then, I feel like this song is more of a Beth Anderson song written by somebody else.
Oh, man. Wow. I'm kind of in agreement with you, but I you know, I completely forgot that that was part of what you guys do for this thing is like listening to the other songs too. So
we didn't do it either.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I think Neverending Story is a great song and it wouldn't sound the same without him. And who, I mean, how, we don't know. Yeah, of course he didn't write it, but how involved was he with the producing of it? You know, I don't know who produced it, you know, and the arrangements and things. Also, I need to give a shout out to the sitar in there, because I don't know if it's an actual sitar, if it's just a synthesizer, but I love that little part. How, why is that fantasy-ish? I don't know, but it's awesome.
I think Matt has a pretty good point here. And Heidi, I would guess that this entire thing, now this is unfair of me maybe to assume this, but I would assume that Lamal just came in and sang this thing.
Oh, snap.
And if I'm wrong, if I'm proved wrong, then I will reverse my position. But I think I got to go with Matt on this, that this song is thunder all the way. Mm. Big props to whoever
Giorgio.
These guys are. Yeah, Giorgio
and Keith.
Beth Anderson. Beth Anderson, like Matt said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Lamal seems to not be that important in this, and maybe they were just being like, Lamal had that Too Shy. It's probably still being played on the radio. It's like a year and a half later. The song was a hit. And they were just trying to, they wanted to put a face to it. They needed some sort of name attached to this song from this soundtrack to this strange puppet fantasy movie. you know, they weren't going to get John Cougar Mellencamp to do it. They weren't getting Springsteen to do it. They had to get someone attached to it with some sort of notoriety. And I think Lamal was just the guy at that moment. He had just been kicked out of his band. And yeah, I think that Lamal is a blunder.
Yeah.
But I think the song is a thunder.
I just confirmed. So Giorgio did produce as well as write the song.
Okay.
And also, just throwing this out there, clicked into his page just out of curiosity. Since we were talking about, man, this Giorgio guy seems like he is someone that we should know more of. He actually has been given the nickname the Father of Disco.
That's cool.
Because he wrote many songs for Donna Summer, including I Feel Love, The Last Dance, Hot Stuff, Bad Girls, and MacArthur Park.
He's awesome.
He's the magic behind the song. You could have grabbed any vocalist from another one-hit wonder new wave band, and I feel like I'd still be like, Neverending Story rips. I hate to do that to Lamal, but I think that I'm going to do that to Lamal.
Did you watch the music video too? He kind of has the David Bowie like labyrinth hairdo in it.
So if Jonathan was here, because I don't know who this person is, and I don't think any of us read comics on the level that Jonathan does. But I did read that Lamal was the inspiration for the Marvel X-Men character Longshot, specifically in the way he styles his hair.
All right, so he did have some sort of impact, I guess.
Yeah. Sorry, Lamal.
We love you, Lamal.
Oh, no. We do.
Lamal's going to be so pissed when he listens to this episode.
Because he's totally going to listen to
it. Because it's going to be a total bait and switch. It's going to be 35 minutes of us being like, man, Lamal's great. And then it comes time to talk about one hit wonder, one hit blunder. And we're like, you know what? Fuck Lamal.
You know what, though?
No, I think he is great.
I don't know.
He is. But
give any of us the success of Too Shy and then Neverending Story. And I think that we could have followed that up with some more hits. That's all I'm saying.
Since he was gifted Neverending Story, the skies opened up and said, you, sir, are going to be the one to ride this train to the stratosphere.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now I wish I had done even more research than I did. But
Lamal, you're a blunder.
I still love the song.
Look. Well, Heidi, while we have you on here, though, Heidi, obviously you've got a short film that's continuing to pop up and play at different film festivals and, you know, get constant. You won some awards recently in North Carolina, I believe. Is that correct?
South Carolina.
One of the Carolinas. I was close. I could have said Georgia.
Well, the one that I'm from, South Carolina.
The only one that matters, Matt.
I'm only giving Matt a hard time because we've been friends for a while. So
he deserves a hard time.
Yes, thank you for bringing up the film. It's called Chasing Fletcher Allen. It's doing well. The festivals that it plays, it usually gets some recognition, and we won Best Short Film at the Reedy Reels Film Festival in Greenville, South Carolina, which is my hometown. The cool part was that the people running the festival didn't know who I was or anything like from before. So it was pretty cool to be able to come back and showcase it. And we won Best Comedy Short at Lady Filmmakers Festival. And Phil Lamar, who's in our film, won Best Supporting Actor. And I've gotten a few Best Actress nominations. So it's fun. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, Jonathan directed it and co-wrote it with me. And we produced it together. Nice. But I also, I'm a singer. I don't like write songs and stuff. So I feel like I'm kind of qualified to be on the show, sort of. I've done a lot of musical theater and stuff. So
do you think you could have done as good a job as Beth Anderson?
Ooh, I don't know. You know, I think my voice is a little higher than hers. But maybe if I, you know, I met with my coach and trained a little bit, then yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I would have tried. But her performance was really good. You know, it wouldn't have sounded the same. It wouldn't. It would have sounded like my voice instead of her voice.
Oh, wait. Did you give Lamal? You gave Lamal a thunder, or did you say he's?
Yeah. Did I? Oh no, I don't know. I just feel like I need more information. Okay. I don't want to say.
Undecided.
Undecided. Yeah, I definitely give the song a thunder.
We all gave the song a thunder. Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as far as Lamal goes, I don't want to. I would need to see more evidence before I make my decision.
That's fair.
You're a hung jury when it comes to Lamal.
Indeed. Well, yes.
In closing, I would like to tell you, Heidi, that I hope you reach the stars, fly a fantasy, dream a dream, and what you see will be.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalios of the bands Punchline Pack and Another Cheat In, produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing No Stopping Us off the Punchline album Thrilled. Visit punchline.com for merch, new music, and upcoming shows. If you have any interest in podcasting, visit weknowpodcasting.com for how Chris and I can make your show sound as professional as possible. Let us know your thoughts on the show by emailing us at onehitthunderpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.